So I consider myself a pretty, for a long time, hardcore Washington football team fan. And then in the Daniel Snyder era, I don't know why I subject myself to it, but I still have Sunday ticket and I still watch every Washington game. But I don't yell at the television anymore. I just yell at Daniel Snyder. The reason why I'm telling you this is the man that's on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line was in about his fifth year in the NFL before I had even known anything about him, because he's a 15-year vet and spent a long time with Washington. But even in the beginning, he was a guy kind of low on the totem pole. And everything you've earned in this game, Zoe, or you have in this game, you've earned it. And I kind of feel that way about somebody else. I love the human being that is Tyrod Taylor. Just love this guy. I mean, all the guy does is fight like crazy. Right. And everywhere he goes, he wins some games, and they do nothing but try to replace him. And even though the Chargers have Justin Herbert, it really felt like they were going to do whatever they could to have Tyrod Taylor win, relax with Justin Herbert, and then if he did win, treat him right when he got to go somewhere else and try to be the man. You know, something like that. I felt good for him. And then a collapsed lung because you're taking an injection to play with cracked ribs. This, when you look at this story as a longtime vet, what do you hear with Tyrod Taylor?
It's just misfortunate. I mean, you know, obviously he's been around several different teams, and as you kind of laid out kind of the history of him, I played with him in Buffalo and, mm-hmm. and really love him and respect him as a football player, and he is one of those guys that can come in and win for you. Does a great job taking care of the football, extending plays and things of that nature. So the only thing that I, you know, it just sucks that, you know, a team doctor, somebody that you think is going to, is a professional at his job, and everybody makes mistakes. But right before the game, you get your lungs punctured, and now you can't play and go out there and do something that you love. And so I don't, you know, I don't think it's anything that was intentional about it. Just a, you know, a bad situation. Somebody made a mistake, and obviously almost, you know, could cost somebody their life. I mean, I don't know how severe it was if you to try to play through it, what that would have meant, you know, because a lot of guys would have said, let me just tough it out, just a little something, I can get through it. And, it, you know, it's from the shot. So, just fortunately, he was, you know, aware enough to say, hey, I can't go through it and get to the hospital and gotten taken care of.
You know, to me, Zoe, this story, I think the NFL is cringing, and they're cringing because more than anything else, it's about player safety, right? Player safety.
Yeah,
And now all of a sudden you're talking about shots with cracked ribs. And, you know, back when you came into the league.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to go all the way back then. When you came in the league. I'm not going back to me, but when you came into the league. Even then, it was common practice.
Yeah.
It was a common thing you do. You're going to go out, you're going to get shot up to play in a game. I don't think the NFL likes you to know that anymore.
No, and I mean, and it still happens. I mean, guys get injections in their knees or wherever you may need a cortisone shot. You still get Toradol, even though it's in pill form. I mean, you get things that so you can get through and play a game. I mean, it's part of the culture. Yeah, you don't want to glorify it. I think they do a better job, at least from, I know my perspective, I would tell guys, hey, look at it. Here are all your options. Look at the big perspective. And if you still want to do it, cool, you a grown man. And I think for a long time, hey, you better get out there. You better take this shot or you ain't going to be here next week was more
that
of
was in my
the culture, right? Now it has shifted where, hey, I'm going to still give this to you, but you don't have to take it.
Right.
These are your options. So the way the culture is now has shifted, yeah, from when you play to now where we're at in the league. And this is the first time I've ever heard anybody get their lung punctured. Maybe it's happened other times, maybe by a less known player, because I think that matters as well, like with all these injuries, because you got Saquon and Bosa, it's a bigger story. And because it's a starting quarterback, obviously it's going to get more headlines. But yeah, these type of things don't happen all the time. I was in the league, you know, obviously 15 years and never heard of anybody being hurt before a game by a medical professional.
Mm, tough one. Buffalo, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Kansas City, Vegas, Green Bay, Chicago, L.A. Rams, Seattle, and our Arizona Cardinals. I'm taking the Bears off the list because that's the easy one. Give me a team other than the Bears. You're not buying at 2-0. And another team that you think they are so much better than even being 2-0 because of what they're doing.
Now, you just named all the 2-0 teams. Can you did that really quickly? Do it one more time.
Buffalo. Yeah. I think you just wanted to hear Buffalo first.
Yeah. They're legit.
Buffalo, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Tennessee.
That one, I'm not sure yet.
Pittsburgh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I like the way they're playing. We'll see. It's still early.
Man, Tennessee. I love their defense.
Well, yeah. I like Tennessee. I've played them. They're physical. That's a physical game.
Okay. Kansas City.
Yeah, they're legit still.
Vegas.
That's another one. I'm not quite sure. We'll see about them.
That's okay. Green Bay. That's a good one because Green Bay, I think everybody thought they'd be okay this year.
Yes.
But they're killing people.
They are, and we talk about Green Bay because they just played the Lions. The Lions defense held these guys to 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
In like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. They let Aaron on two big penalties get down the field and score a touchdown before the half started. Then they came out of half. They had the Aaron Jones 75-yard, which was misfit. It's not like they did anything special. Misfit, two missed tackles, hit his head on the goalpost. And then I think Matt Stafford on the next possession threw a pick six. Game was over.
Yeah.
So I don't know how sustainable they are because we'll see about them too. I think they're right there too where they can go either way. But Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, but I don't know how explosive they are quite yet.
I'm skipping the Bears. I'm not even letting you talk about them.
Okay.
And the next three are all in this division. For the very first year of division realignment in 2002, the AFC West went 7-1. It's never been done again until this year. And now the NFC West is 7-1 for only the second time in division realignment history. So Arizona, Rams, Seattle are all 2-0. Do you buy all of it? Obviously, no one's going 16-0 when they play each other twice.
Right.
But are you buying what you're seeing? Are those all three playoff teams to you?
They're all really good teams. Ah, man, if I had to pick one out of the ones that I'm unsure about, though, mm-hmm. it would be the Rams.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure. I want to see more out of them as I watch. I'm lucky enough to be able to go back and watch a lot of these games and see some things that – are some weaknesses that they just haven't been exploited yet. And so I want to see the, 2 weeks is hard for me to say about somebody, but I watched the Rams film, I'm like, okay, I see it. But then they struggle in some areas, especially when things aren't on time and things are off, just like most offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to overcome it and change it throughout a game, I see Seattle doing it. I see Kyler doing it here. I'm not quite sure about Goff. And he's a Cal guy, so I just want to see how he continues to move it. And kind of overcomes. I just want to see it because last year he kind of stepped back. This year he started pretty solid, and I want to see where it goes from there.
Mm.
Of the two games that have been played right now, what about Gronk? What are you seeing from Gronk right now?
Yeah, I mean he's an older guy. I mean he's a bigger guy. I mean he never was a burner, but he's been beat up a lot. I mean football is a hard game, especially when you take a year off to get back into it. It's just a shock on your body. So maybe it's going to take him a little time to kind of get back to – because you say Gronk, you think, okay, he's about to come out here and just light it up. It just takes some time. And I don't know if he underestimated that because he had never taken a year off or never been hurt. Well, he'd been hurt, but for an extended period of time being away from the game and trying to jump back in it, it's definitely a hard feat to do. But if anybody can do it, it's definitely him. And by the end of the year, he may – like, man, this dude came on strong. So
I think he underestimated B.A.'s offense.
Yeah,
More about throwing to the wide receiver down the field than it is.
Thought Brady would ignore that part of the offense.
Exactly, right?
Well, Brady gets to talk a little bit more, they said last week. So maybe he starts working his boy back into the game plan some way.
This show right now with Doug Wolf and Lorenzo Alexander, 67% of the show has been an NFL Pro Bowl attendee. Okay, that's pretty impressive. Sorry that I dropped the ball myself. But I got to know, since you two need to explain to the three Atlanta Falcons fans that are listening, if the ball hasn't gone 10 yards and it's just rolling there, why do you not pick it up?
It's a whole bunch of stuff. Somebody said that one of the players said, or I don't know who said it, that they were told not to pick it up, right? So that was not clear coaching, if that's what it was. His players obviously didn't understand what he meant. He's probably saying if the ball is not going past 10 yards, you don't have to pick it up. So they felt like it wasn't going. Two, before you throw stones, I want you to go out there, line up 10 yards apart from and put somebody like me across from you. Somebody kick you a ball, and they run it full steam at you, and the ball is on the ground rolling slow, getting close to that line, but you also see somebody like me bearing on you. I think that went through some of those guys' minds because it was like, no, I'm not going to jump on it. You jump on it. No, I'm not going to jump on it. You jump on it. And so nobody wanted to make the play. Nobody was bold enough to make the play with that pressure on them because it was, you know, obviously a tight game or you wouldn't have an onside kick right there. And so guys just kind of freezed up. And so I think it was a combination of the two, you know, not clear coaching and then guys not wanting to be the guy that it hits off of them and they get the ball back.
So I only have time for a yes or no answer right here, and it's not fair, but they need to do something about the onside kick. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
What do you mean? Well, to bring it back that. To have a higher success rate?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They need to restore. Something needs to be done there. I understand about player safety and everything else, but, man, it's just they've taken
And I'm assuming you don't mean 4th and 15 onside kick.
No, I'm not talking about 4th and 15.
Yeah.
I'm not. Are you talking
like
about that?
Like Dallas did to get it. Because we even start putting those little spin kicks that kind of get there slower so you can actually have time to get to the ball. Because right now, you can't get to the ball the way it's set up.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about that more next time.
Yep.
So love you. Thanks.
All right,
there's former Cardinals linebacker Lorenzo Alexander joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line for our beautiful part of the program we do every Thursday, the Lowdown with Zoe. And it's brought to you by Coulter Automotive Group, your family-owned and operated dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Coming up next, we do it every weekday after a Diamondbacks game at 7 o'clock. But when we have Zoe, we give it to you next. With just a handful of games left, the daily is like an offensive outburst explosion. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Doug and Wolf react to yesterday's D-backs game. D-backs Daily. Brought to you by America Roofing. Hunter to protect your family is the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
Kind of stunk. Diamondbacks didn't do much, and they were down 3-0 going into going into the fifth inning, and then just an explosion of offense in the fifth and sixth inning. Let's start it off with something cool when you get your first.
Matheson swings, and he hits a deep drive to left, and this ball will sail out of here.
That's his first major league home run. It was in the bottom of the fifth, and it made it 3-1. But the offense really comes home big time when everything starts rolling in the sixth inning, and it's just one hit after another. Christian.
The pitch. And a ground ball to first. Warner coming to the plate. The throw. And the tag by Kelly for the out.
I forgot about that one. That was a big play, Wolf, and I hit the wrong one, but I was kind of excited that I did that to talk about how perfect Christian Walker's throw was home to be able to get it out and keep the lead at 3-1.
But it was so interesting that Mike Hazen cited Christian Walker as one of the real positives in this 60-game sprint.
You, today, celebrated one of the real positives as Carson Kelly.
Escobar, Calhoun lead. And a base hit that's going to tie the game. One run is in. Here comes the other runner and will score.
That's Carson getting a two-run single in the bottom of the sixth inning to start the scoring. He's immediately followed up by back-to-back catcher base hits, even though Varsho wasn't playing catcher.
Check of the runner and the pitch. Varsho a line drive into right center field, and that's going to go deep.
How deep? He actually scored the other slow-footed catcher from first on his RBI triple. And then, to make it even more fun, for the first time in Major League Baseball history, someone batting out of the 9-hole in a National League game got his first two homers of his career.
Swing and a drive to left field. And Matheson, has he got another one? Yeah, he does. A two-homer game for Wyatt Matheson.
Followed by a back-to-back from Lo Castro. Diamondbacks win 7-3. Look at that.
You got to love that right there. Hit it, ladies and gentlemen, as we say in the business.
You've been listening to D-backs Daily on the Doug and Wolf Show. Brought to you by America Roofing. Hunter to protect your family is the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
To me, out of all that, though, Wolf, that wasn't the highlight of the day yesterday.
For
the D-backs. They took a two-game series from the Rangers minor league affiliate, okay? Great. I'm glad. It's better than the alternative, but, you know, I'm not going to jump up and down in a losing season when you beat up a team that's terrible. Yet, it was before the game when Torrey Lovello was asked about Eduardo Escobar, one of the best human beings on the team, but, you know, an opinionated statement by me, doing something not very professional, getting ready for the season, showing up out of shape.
Yeah.
I think he showed up at summer camp in a different physical condition than he was in spring training and in previous years. Was that something you guys noticed? Was that a concern of yours? And would you like to see him maybe trim back down heading into next year?
Yes, it was a concern. And yes, it was addressed. And yes, I would like to see it change.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, Eduardo, something has gone on this year, right? Nowhere even close to what he did last year in terms of just going about his business. I'm not talking about even production, just watching him play. He's booted more balls, I think, in the field. He just doesn't seem to have the same bat speed.
He went 2-for-4 yesterday, Wolf, and still isn't batting 200.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, he's just over the Mendoza line now.
Oh, is he?
Isn't he? Yeah, 204, I believe, Doug.
Oh, okay. I thought he was at 198. Thank you.
Right now. But I'm just saying, he's flirted with the Mendoza line all year.
Yeah, you are right. I just looked at it. I was looking at yesterday's stat, or 2 days ago. Yep.
Yeah, just listen, they need him. They need him. It's kind of like Mad Bum. I honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I thought the strength of this team was going to be the rotation. And Mad Bum is the tip of the spear when you talk about the strength of this team being the rotation. It's Mad Bum. When Mad Bum wasn't Mad Bum, for lack of a better way of saying it, man, I think it put everybody in a pall. And I don't know that to be the case, but I know it didn't instill a ton of confidence inside that clubhouse.
Here is Torrey Lovello asked about how does his physical condition affect the outcome of his season.
Just some rotational mobility in the core area. I think, baseball is a big core game and, you know, you're constantly spinning and bending. So, I've seen it improve, but I think it can be done better.
And listen, you have talked about leadership in the clubhouse this year. That's a sign of lack of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a lot of really nice guys that I'm kind of worried nobody on the team feels comfortable getting in the face of anybody else on the team.
Never forget, there can be no betas without the alpha.
Yeah, I think they've got a lot of really good guys that kind of are in the, hey, I do my job, you do yours. And I get that to a point. That's what you want everybody to be. But when you see a guy like Escobar go for a 30-homer season that's a key to the year, show up like that, and nobody gets in his face to change it quickly, that's clearly you're – look at Michael Jordan, okay? Funny reference here. But Michael Jordan wanted to win so bad he didn't care if you liked him. You have to look at Diamondbacks players, and this is all Escobar's fault. But you have to now move on to the rest of the players and say, none of you wanted to win bad enough to make this situation uncomfortable. Okay. And look what you got.
Never forget Kobe Bryant, what he said. I'm going to say this quickly, Basin O'Neill's. Leadership is lonely. I'm not going to be afraid of confrontation to get us to where we need to go. Never forget that.
Kobe. What a great lesson. What a great lesson. Coming up next, Lions are praising one player for the Arizona Cardinals a lot. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The time is 7:33, if you're wondering. 7:33. And in approximately 6 minutes, Wolf will be uncontrollably excited. And you will hear this strange clap.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
And the reason why I can call that shot is you need to hear two things coming from the Detroit Lions. And then after that, you'll hear one other thing, and that's when the clapping will begin from Ron Wolf.
Okay.
Matt Patricia, 48 seconds. I'm not going to cut it. I'm not going to edit it. I'm going to ask you in the middle of your car as you're driving to work or you're sitting there with your phone at your desk to listen for 48 straight seconds.
Great defensive coordinator.
And probably just leave it at that. And the gushing that he's going to spew for the quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I would definitely say you can see the difference between early on last year when we played him and then later in the season and how he kind of matured and grew as a player in the NFL. I think I may have said this before, but somehow I think this guy got faster and quicker and more explosive in the offseason. It's just amazing to watch him in open space. He's a smooth athlete. He can really get to top end acceleration extremely quick. And I think that's what catches a lot of people by surprise. You know, he can just burst and explode. And within two steps, he's at full speed. And then he can stop within a step or two. And I think some of that for quarterback position, you know, you're not necessarily used to it. It's almost like trying to tackle a punt returner, you know, in those sort of space plays that he's able to create. And I think that's one area where I think he just feels a lot more comfortable right now. And you see him do that.
Effusive in his praise, is he not right there?
I didn't really think about it until he said it. But I actually think for me, as a guy that watches a lot of football but is not a talent evaluator, I believe he's the only athlete I've ever seen that you could say smooth and jitterbug, quick twitch, and you're right. I mean, almost everybody's one or the other that's a good athlete.
Sure.
And he's both. And then to add that punt return comment, I think that's really strong. There's a lot of truth to that, that it's like a punt returner in space. So that's the head coach. The defensive coordinator is so impressed. He says something I've never heard from a coordinator. Most people that watch a ton of film that I've heard coaches, they're able to say he did this in this game, this game, this game. And they're able to talk about it so well. I mean, how many times did you hear in Mike Mayock during NFL Network's draft coverage when he'd go, this game against Holy Cross, this game, you know, and he knows every game he watched. Listen to this defensive coordinator, Corey Unlin. He doesn't even remember the games. He's so impressed.
They're 3rd and 17 last week or the week before. Getting the games mixed up right now, trying to watch all this stuff. And, you know, he's running for first downs for 22 yards on 3rd and 17 when you got it covered. So, guy's dynamic, man. He's fast, changed direction, makes guys miss. Not to mention the zone read stuff. So, you got to be good on all that, making sure all your gaps. You got to have somebody for the quarterback, you got to have somebody for the dive.
Have you ever heard a coach say, I got to watch all this film?
Right. I know. Absolutely. I can't remember which one it is. Just watching him right now. He's like a video game, whatever it may be. But listen, Corey Unlin is right on this. He's absolutely correct about this. And yet here it is, Mason Onions. Here's the praise being heaped down by your opponent. Now, I'm not saying they're doing it in a disingenuous kind of way, because watch Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Watch him play. I mean, it's pretty obvious what he's doing right now. So I don't think they're trying to actually fluff him up a little bit so that he'll go out there and get all complacent, because that's the best part about this story. The praise being heaped down on him by Matt Patricia right now and Corey Unlin, the defensive coordinator for the Lions, the praise being heaped, it has no impact, in my opinion, on Kyler Murray.
Well, that's your opinion. But I think your opinion is fact when you hear Kyler Murray ask that exact question about the hype the Detroit Lions are laying on you and the outside hype of being 2-0.
I mean, nobody needs to stay on me about it. It's not my first time dealing with success in my lifetime. You know, this is part of the game. You know, we work hard in the offseason. We work hard to practice to win. We expect to win. I mean, I think everybody should expect to win. So, you know, when you do, you shouldn't be surprised by it. You know, I'm not a guy that gets too high, gets too low. I am who I am. I, you know, remain the same no matter what. But like I said, I mean, this isn't the first time dealing with success. So for me personally, I mean, I've done nothing. As a team, I feel like we've done nothing. So, you know, we just got to really, you know, continue to work.
it doesn't get any better. It doesn't get much better than that right there. That is the alpha male in the room. That is your team leader. That is your quarterback. And that is exactly the kind of attitude that needs to permeate that locker room. And Basinonians, I believe this is permeating that locker room. It's a do your job mentality. It's an expectation that you will do your job, of course. The expectation is you're going to do your job and you're not going to worry about other people and what they say about you. It's the expectation you're going to do your job and not worry about what other people are saying about you, and you'll stack wins because of it. It's an individual expectation, first of all. This is who Kyler Murray is. He doesn't care what you're going to say about him. He doesn't. It's not going to impact him, negative or positive. He doesn't care. All he cares about is his next video game, and I'm saying that with tongue in cheek, all right? But Kyler Murray, that attitude right there needs to permeate the locker room. I think that it is permeating the locker room, and once that does, the expectation of going out and playing well and winning games is going to be something you never even talk about. It's just the expectation. And I think there's a team in the league that has that and has for a long time, and it's the Patriots.
I can't imagine the Twitter handle in about 5 seconds. Did you hear Wolf just compare the Cardinals to the Patriots?
I did not compare them that way. I'm talking about one level of expectation. It is something that Bill Belichick, I'm telling you right now, this is something he fosters. You can talk about Bill Belichick and all the great schematics of Bill Belichick and what a brilliant guy he is, but the fact that he's got a way of developing a culture inside a locker room that I think is second to none, I stand and applaud him on that. That might be his brilliance personified.
Well, for me, I've got to say that I was one for two. I said we would have an explosion from you in 6 minutes. We got it in five. So if I beat the clock, right, I'm going to give myself credit. That was the one. But I went 0-for on the clap. We heard excitement, but yes, we didn't get the
clap
while he was talking.
I wasn't going to do it. I almost did, but I wasn't going to do it because you said I was going to do it.
So I got to want to, but you didn't bring it. I just love the.
Nobody needs to stay on me about it. It's not my.
Nobody.
It's not my first time dealing with success in my lifetime.
I mean, that's so. I mean, 99% of Americans that say that are arrogant. And yet somehow he fits into this 1% of just, listen, this is normal for me. I expect it. I don't care. Back off. Who cares?
This is beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. And never forget, based on it, this is a powerful thing. This is powerful. When somebody who plays the way Kyler plays, somebody who goes out and competes the way that Kyler competes, somebody that has accomplished so much at such a young age out of such a little body, that resonates in a locker room.
I love enthusiasm over victory. I love the power of emotion that lifts a team. But it does kind of remind me of the famous story of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, game one of the Magic Johnson era, hits a hook, last-second shot to beat the San Diego Clippers. And the Lakers get the win. They're 1-0 on the season. And Magic Johnson starts hugging Kareem and shaking him all over, just going absolutely nuts at winning this game. They get into the locker room, and Kareem tells him, kid, don't ever do that to me again. It's a game. It's our job. It was one game. We could never sustain that kind of energy all year. Now, he didn't know Magic actually could. So Kareem did lighten up over the years, but it's to the point of here is Kyler. Imagine somebody going nuts, freaking out. We've done this, we've done that, and Kyler says, I've had success my whole life.
Man, you know? It's not my first time dealing with success in my lifetime.
Yeah. So calm down, buddy.
I guess so. I mean, look at him. Everything this kid does turns to gold.
Coming up next, someone else, however, was handed the keys to the Cardinals offense the moment he got there. And it's not Kyler Murray. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Humility.
The yardage totals will not astound you. 60 in game one, 86 in game two. But the 4.1 yards per carry might make you stand up a little bit. And then something even more interesting, the keys It's Doug and Wolf with Wolf Bear and Maloney in the Auction Community Studios. And Paul and I are on opposite ends of the earth. And Kenyon Drake was on Sirius XM. And I hadn't heard this story, Paul. I don't know if you had, but it's about a conversation with Cliff and the keys for Cliff.
When I got to Arizona, Coach Kingsbury just kind of gave me the keys, and I was able to use everything that I had been through up to that point in my career to really just go out there and play football and do it in a way that was conducive to helping this team be successful.
So, Paul, do you agree that Kenyon has the keys from Cliff Kingsbury as coach for the Cardinals?
Okay, so wait a minute. A running back with the keys to the offense? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't say I've really heard about a running back getting the keys, since the running back isn't exactly the decision maker unless he's running Wildcat. But I will say that they had targeted Kenyon Drake. If they didn't get him in a trade, they were going to try and get him in the offseason. They do like his skill set and the fit in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And I think that's been part of the process, has been Steve Keim and the other personnel people in the front office learning exactly what Cliff Kingsbury's system needs. And I think that's part of any, especially with something that's somewhat innovative that Cliff Kingsbury is running. What sort of offensive lineman do the Cardinals need? What sort of running back do the Cardinals need? Honestly, David Johnson was a bad fit. And Carson Palmer said as much to you guys, if memory serves. And so they bring in Kenyon Drake. He puts that foot in the ground. He gets north and south. He makes the first man miss. He's still a very capable pass catcher. He just seems to be a much better fit in this offense. So if that constitutes giving him the keys, okay.
You know, what's interesting about this is I think the Arizona Cardinals need to improve in terms of running the ball. I want to see the Cards get better at running the ball. I know they're number 5 in rushing yards per game and number 8 in rushing yards per play, but there are a lot of scrambles that are included in those numbers right there, right? And that's the one area I want to see them get better. And it's one of the reasons why, Basinonians, I was so jacked up with their last possession against Washington, where they took the ball in the fourth quarter with just over 6 minutes to go and ran the ball mostly down the field, 5 carries for Kenyon Drake for 37 yards, and then tacked on 3 points to make it 30-15 in that game. They basically closed out the game. And that, to me, is something that really encouraged me. It's something I know they got to get better at.
Can I add to your list that if I'm truly going to believe in an NFL team as a legit contender, I need to see that run game. I agree with you, Wolf. And I need to see more of an ability to stop the run. Through 2 games, they've given up 100 yards rushing in both games and 5 yards a carry in both games.
Yeah,
that's not going to work. That's not viable. If you want to get to the postseason and have a shot to win in the postseason, you can't have that sort of run defense, and you need to tune up your rush offense. And those are 2 things I'd really like to see, especially against these next 3 opponents.
It's a great point. And it may have something to do with a little bit in the beginning of, hey, we'll give you stuff in front of us, but we're not going to let you score. It's kind of more of a bend but don't break, because of the fact that the Cardinals believe they're going to get a lead, and then in the second half, it's the lead that will take away your running game.
I feel like in this offense, the faster we go, the more we end up wearing down the offense or the defensive line at the end of the game. And if you look at the last couple games in the fourth quarter, we were able just to kind of end the game on our terms, and that's what you want to do in this league.
Because it does seem clear, doesn't it, that the game plan is get a lead with the pass game, keep the offense in front of you from the other team's standpoint, from your defensive standpoint, and then in the second half, try to let Chandler Jones and Kenyon Drake eat, because you've got the lead.
And as far as the up-tempo goes, you see it on the sideline. The game plan is, as soon as we get a first down, go. It's go time. Get on the ball. Here we go. And we're going to get into the up-tempo. We're going to try and limit their substitutions. And we're going to try and wear them down in this series. Now, does it ultimately pay off in the fourth quarter? Yeah, the Cardinals believe so in that Niners opener, for example. And Cliff Kingsbury said as much on the record. But we've had DJ Humphreys, Wolf, on the Big Red Rage tell us last year that if they can get a first down initially, early in the drive, and then get into the up-tempo, And by the time they would get to play 8 or 9 of a drive, and you're limiting the defensive substitutions, he would definitely see it wear on the defensive front. Guys would be gassed. They wouldn't be going nearly as hard. I think that's one of the reasons you saw the big 22-yard touchdown run by Kyler against the Niners.
Yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely, Paulie. And again, it's part of the offense that really needs to develop here, even though I look at some of the numbers, right, and the fact that Kenyon Drake has 146 rushing yards through two games. He's actually in the top half of the league, and yet I want more. I want to see more out of Kenyon Drake. I want to see more of this offense. And what's fascinating to me, again, about this offense and how this offense does run the ball, they run by people, not over people. It's the best way to characterize it. It is. And the only thing more demoralizing to me than getting run over is getting run by. You're not even getting a hat on some of these guys. You're not even getting a tackle on some of these guys to get run over. It's got to be maddening for a defensive coordinator to watch how much deception the Arizona Cardinals actually use to run the ball.
Okay, what is more embarrassing in a film room on Monday as a defensive player? You got trucked and run over, or you got smoked and just left behind by a burner?
It's like I think of Landon Collins, one-on-one with Kyler Murray. One-on-one on that run by Kyler Murray. That's embarrassing. That really is. He looked absolutely outmanned. And we're talking about a great football player in Landon Collins. At least if you come up and you're Buda Baker or somebody like that, and you stick it on somebody and the guy runs over you, okay. Stuff like that's going to happen. Not that it happens to Buddha a lot, because it doesn't. But you get my point. Is stick your face in there. At least there's the modicum of respect that you get for sticking it in there and putting it on somebody and getting run over. Getting totally run by where you don't put a finger on the guy, like we've seen with Kyler Murray on some of his runs. It's embarrassing.
I'll give an example. The Monday night game. Did you see in the second half when Henry Ruggs drew the pass interference? And I'm telling you, that corner was one-on-one in space against Henry Ruggs, and he's running the 9 route, the go route, and the guy's just grabbing his arm, and he's grabbing the jersey, and he's like, I don't want to get embarrassed on Monday Night Football. Yep. I mean, Henry Ruggs has done a lot of jack, I know, because he's on the Pauly Pigskins, and I made the mistake of stinking and drafting him and taking Wolf's advice, but he did draw the PI.
Huh.
It does bring up, why doesn't fantasy football give you those yards for pass interference?
I'm with you.
I was losing it with Tom Brady because I have Tom Brady, and I couldn't believe how many drop passes for Tampa Bay or times that the receiver drew a pass interference call, and you don't get anything for it as a fantasy guy. Because you guys were talking about Kenyon Drake, I couldn't help it. I looked up David Johnson. David Johnson's averaging 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I was like, wow. And then he's only got 111 yards total. Mm. They've only given him the ball 22 times. If a guy's got 5 yards a carry, should he not have a little more than 22 carries?
I think, honestly, they're trying to get that passing game going. I think more than anything else, Bill O'Brien wants to prove it. We don't need D-Hop to do that.
I was wondering if you're right, or I was wondering if they're scared that David Johnson will break and they just don't want to overuse him early in the year.
All I know is the Houston Texans at 0-2 are most definitely in the danger zone right now. Mm-hmm. That is a certainty.
Coming up next, your Rush Hour reboot on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.